Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Hi, Ishmael. How are you?
I'm fine, George. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and thank you so much. It's a joy. I've been excited just to wait to have this conversation with you, knowing just the way you've progressed in your leadership journey and the regional role that you hold now. Thank you so much for honoring us with your presence.
Yeah, you're most welcome, and also thank you for the privilege and just the honor and the invitation. I treasure that. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Let's just starting off, learning who you are, Ishmael. Who are you?
I think I love introducing myself in terms of the most important things in my life. Number one, I am a child of God. And number two, I am a husband to Diana. I've been married for 13 years. And the number three, the Lord has blessed us with four wonderful children between 11 and 3 years. And then now when it comes to what I do in the community, is I am a pastor with ICC in Imara, and I am also working with One Hope as the regional director for Eastern Africa. I think that's what takes most of my time. So One Hope is a global organization, and our work is to develop tools for children and youth so that they can be able to read and understand the Bible in a relevant way to their age and to their context. And so we are doing this in 120 countries, and I have the privilege of leading 10 of those countries on the east of Africa. So we have 10 countries. I can mention them. Some of them are sensitive countries, but just working on the eastern side of Africa.
Wow. Thank you. And congratulations for that leadership role that you have in this part of Africa. So what does your leadership role entail as the regional director of One Hope?
So I think I can say two major roles. Number one is to oversee the operations in these 10 countries, just to make sure that we are achieving our objectives or outcomes. We do a lot of books. I think we do like 10 million books every year, you know, just taking these books to the kids in these 10 countries, just to make sure that goes smoothly. At the end of the year, we have hit our goal of how many children that we need to reach. So that's from operations. And then the other major role that I have is just to build relationships. As you can hear, we are trying to take the word of God to so many children. And so that means we have to work with a lot of people on the ground. We have to work with a lot of churches, other organizations. We have to work with governments. And so my other big role is just to build and maintain these relationships so that they can, you know, they can aid our work.
How has that been?
Well, it's good. Naturally, I'm very good in operations because of my personality. I'm a task-oriented person, so operations is the easiest bit of it. But as you know, most of people who are task-oriented struggle on the relationship side. So it's been a very big learning. But just knowing, you know, when you're called to be a leader, you must be an all-round leader. So you must be aware of your strengths and your weaknesses, and you must have to keep on sharpening your strengths, but also working on your weaknesses so that they don't pull you. I've been in this learning, this relationship build class for the last, I can say, like 10 years since I got into ministry. And so it's been learning, but just seeing relationships thrive and having to learn diversity and different cultures. So when we talk about 10 countries, those are 10 different cultures. And in every one of those cultures, you have to relate to people very differently. Their expectations, the way you honor people, the way you recognize people is very different. So it's been a very good time to grow. And this ends up affecting the whole of your life, not just your career. It affects the way you relate to everybody around you.
Just talk to us a bit more about that part, you know, saying that it affects your entire life. Just elaborate that a bit more.
I've learned to relate better, even just in my own household. You know, just I'm one person with one personality and expectations. And I think naturally for human beings, you tend to relate with people centered on you, your needs, your views, your perspective. But I think being in this role and having to really just stretch out myself and just have to humble myself and learn how to deal with different people, I think it's helped me in my personal relationship with my wife, with my children, with my family, and, you know, given me new perspectives in terms of just relating and just removed a lot of prejudice from me. Because in my role, I need to first understand the people I'm relating with and come down or come up to their level so that I can be able to relate with them. So I think that's how it's affected my personal life. It's affected my role as a pastor too. I think I'm a better pastor now because, you know, like I've said, you know, there's no prejudice. I'm able to listen to people in their context and in where they are in a better way.
That's a real great lesson. And I really agree with you. Now, going back, where can you say your leadership journey began?
My leadership journey began when I was a teenager. When I was in high school, I led several clubs. I started some clubs. I was part of the prefect's body, the government body, the student government body. But I think my major and most challenging leadership role that really shaped me, and that was my foundational role, is when I was 18, I was appointed as the youth leader group. And back then, I was an 18-year-old leading a youth group of very old people. And I think that's what shaped me. I was in one of the mainstream churches. So youth meant when you're even 40, you're still a youth. And the youth group I was given to lead didn't have a lot of people my age. It had just been these guys who had really overstayed in the youth team. And eventually I got the opportunity. I was very, very young. I was actually the youngest. I think the next person who was my age was in their 20s, you know, maybe in their mid-20s. So I had like 7 years difference between the youngest person I was leading. I can say that's when I began to be formed as a leader, and I learned a lot of lessons. Of course, I made a lot of mistakes, you can imagine, because an 18-year-old is energetic and, you know, I have all these ideas and I want us to push. But I also made a lot of good decisions. I think I was in that role for about 2 or 3 years. And by the time I left, I took that youth group from like 10 very old guys to a group of about 150 very young people in just about 2 years. Very young people. I think the oldest, by the time I left, the oldest member of that youth was below their 30s. And it's just a very vibrant youth group. And that was my major leadership. But I can tell you, I made a lot of mistakes. I think sometimes there's still people I meet up to today I have to apologize to. Because there are a lot of things I did without wisdom and rubbed a lot of people wrongly. I was almost being chased away. But you know, just lessons. I carried a lot of lessons looking back to that time and the things that I was able to achieve when I was very young. And then I got into business, and I was in business for like 7 years. And again, I had several startups. I always laugh with my wife because when we got married in our kitchen, she removed all these business cards of so many companies where I was the managing director. And then she used to hang them. She hung them in the kitchen somewhere. She would always tell me, look where you've come from. So I for 7 years, I think I could get a trophy of the most businesses started. I had so many business ideas. Of course, most of them failed. But I succeeded here and there, and I can proudly say that when I transited from the business world into the ministry world, I actually left a running business that I walked away from. I walked away in success, also having carried a lot of lessons. And 10 years ago, I got into ministry, working with the Life Ministry, Campus Crusade for Christ. And I think I just joined, and in 2012, I got into a leadership role. And I can say now that put me on the trajectory that I'm in right now. So I've been growing in that industry of Christian ministry for the last 10 years as a leader, and I've really grown.
So I'm just curious. So just share one mistake that you did when you were that youth leader. What's one mistake that you apologized number of times for, if you don't mind.
Of course. I think back then, with in the church that I was in, I said it's a mainstream church. And back in the 90s and early 2000, the church was going through a very big conflict between the young people and the old people. You know, there was such a very big age gap, and the old generation was aging out, and the young people were running away from the church, and you know, there was a very big divide. I'm a millennial, so that's also the time, you know, now the millennials were also rising, there was technology, there was globalization, so you have these people with a very rigid view of how life and culture should be, and you have this young man who just got exposed to the world and has all these ideas on how church should be. And like I said, I am, when I did my Enneagram, I'm a commander. So I can really be pushy. You know, I can push things through. And now when you're 18, you don't have a lot of wisdom on what to push and how far to push. And I think that put me in conflict with the elders a lot, and I said things I shouldn't have said, and I pushed things I shouldn't have pushed. You know, I could have had a lot more wisdom than that. But thank God, I think a lot of those elders, some of them are there, some of them have left. They're very gracious. They were the wise men, and so they saw my youth foolishness. And I think at some point they also gave me that opportunity also to thrive as a leader. I had the privilege of actually going back to my local church just like two months ago. And I just listened to some of those elders just talk about me and the work that I did and how that affected the church up to today. You know, it just helped the church grow, you know, very much up to today. And just looking back at the conflicts that we had with some of those people, you know, I can just see, and I can also draw a lot of lessons from them. They didn't have the worldview that I had. They didn't have the exposure that I had. But I think in their wisdom, they also let me in my foolishness also drive and bring these ideas.
So talking about wisdom you can draw, maybe a bit more specific, what are some of two nuggets of wisdom you can draw from those elders? Maybe you can share with us.
One of it is just learning to balance between getting things done and keeping relationships and just understanding that everybody is not like you. And I think that that's one of the wisdom that I didn't have. I think back then I felt that I was the best and I had the best ideas and everybody had to bow down to my best ideas. But I didn't have the perspective and the wisdom around diversity. You know, that I need to know I'm dealing with people of different ages, dealing with people from different varying cultural backgrounds. I'm dealing with people who understand things at a different rate. You know, for me, I go fast. I understand. I learn very fast. I adapt very fast. And I think that's one of the wisdom. So when you need to lead and to be successful, and you're leading in an arena that has all these kinds of personalities and diversities, you only succeed as a leader when you're able to just pause, learn everybody, and then I'll just decide, you know, this is the route that I'm going to. I have to take care of everybody's needs and everybody's feelings. And sometimes even when I'm pushing my agenda, I have also to have to have multiple skills to be able to be a multiple communicator. You know, I will communicate this vision to this person in this way because that's how they're going to understanding. How do I contextualize my communication? And this other person, I will tell them like this. I remember I used to be a great evangelist, and you know, we would be invited to speak in some of these churches, and you know, we loved to pray. And for us, we believed, you know, you need to be on your feet to pray for God to hear you. And I remember most of, you know, you're in a church where there are old people. Some of them even have problem with their legs, and you are there insisting everybody must stand up so that we pray and we praise. I'll never forget this. I always get embarrassed, you know, every time I think I stood on the pulpit and I told those old people who were not standing, you know, if they have leg problem, they'll only get healed if they stand before God. So so just looking back, you know, as a leader, getting that wisdom. And now, because I work in an organization where we have a lot of young people, and I think getting that wisdom from those elders, now I'm also able to guide the young people. They've started life and they have a lot of these ideas, but just being able to really now just channel, not killing them, not chasing them, but just being able to channel them and working with them to that place where they also grow as leaders and taking into account, because they are very fresh, perspective. They don't have the legitimacy of mind that us who are growing old have. And I think organizations need such people. You need those fresh ideas. You need those people who are not inhibited in their thinking. You need those people who are ready to take risks. But how do you also now guide them to really just put them on the right path?
I hear you really talking with some sense of excitement and passion, even as you're talking how you lead young people. And I know for a long time, even in your ministry, you've worked a lot with young people. So I get that. When you look at your role, what are some of the things that make you wake up to do what you're doing?
For me, it's just boils down to my calling. I am called and I'm very clear on my calling. I've been clear on my calling since I was 18 years old. And I know my calling is to reach young people. So personally, I've really invested myself into that for the last 22 years, since I was 18, to just go out there and pour out my life into other young people, even when I was as young as them. When I explained to you all these conflicts that I had with the elders, it's because I felt the church was not doing enough, you know, to reach to the young people, you know, and I really needed to go out there and bring the young people to church. So that calling, but also now just realizing that it doesn't matter how talented or how gifted or how anointed I could be as a leader and someone who is called, I can only do so much. And so the way I look at my role and what makes me wake up every day is to know that God has given me a mandate to go and partner and look for other people that God has called into that space. And my role as a leader, I see, is to go and to mobilize and to help grow all these other people so that they can also thrive in their area of calling, because it's not an individual calling. The industry that I'm in is not an industry that any single person can thrive on their own. It's always teamwork. It's always a body. And if you can allow me to just quote the Bible, you know, says we are a body, we are the body of Christ. You know, one of us is an eye, the other one is a hand. And this is not just in the Bible, by the way. I think it's every organization, even the corporate organization, you know, everybody. You can't have every person, every single person become the same part of the body. And so for me, as the leader, it's just to help all these people who have diverse talents and who have diverse callings and who have diverse giftings, for me to, first of all, just inspire them, to make them aware that they have these giftings and they have the potential, and challenge them and give them the platform for them to thrive and to get to their full potential. And again, just to mobilize them. And my calling is not full if I don't do that as a leader, because that means that I'm able to reach to many more people. I've told you, like, now we're doing 10 million. Even if I mobilize myself, my wife and my children, we can reach 10 million young people. But every year we are able to do that because we are able to offer leadership to all these other people and just bring these beautiful, diverse gifts and talents together for us to be able to accomplish that. So that is what makes me wake up every day and do what I do with a lot of joy, because I know I'm living out my calling, but I'm also seeing other people thrive and live out their calling. And that really excites me.
And it's great to hear that. You know, talking about calling, and many people, you know, don't have the privilege like you to know that this is what you've been called to do and this is what excites you. As much as you're living your calling, you know, there are always challenges, you know, along the way, like leadership, like life and other areas we go through. There are challenges that we face and we need to overcome. For you, what have been some of those challenges as a leader?
So I like looking at my challenges from two categories. Number one is the intrinsic challenge, the challenge that comes from within myself. And then number two is the external challenge, the challenge that comes from without. And my intrinsic challenge is my personality. You know, like I've said, I have a personality like each one of us, and none of us is perfect. So our personality sometimes can be one of the biggest stumbling block that we have. And I've had to learn over the years on how to balance people's personal needs. I think I'm just repeating what I've said, and an ability for me to see results. And I think that has been one of the biggest point of conflict for me, just to draw the line to know, you know, this is how you push, and that's now you're pushing, you're getting into this person's nerves, you're getting into their feelings, you know, you're pushing them. Now this is where you need to be a pastor and to love on them and to encourage them, and also not to swing to the other wayside, that you don't challenge people and push people to drive and to work hard and to do that. So that's a challenge. And naturally, now being not my area, you know, I think sometimes I'm conflicted. Sometimes I feel like I've pushed too much, and sometimes I run away too much, you know. So just learning to balance that's my interesting challenge. Then externally, I think one of the challenges that I find is the cultural environment of we are in Africa. And when I talk about the cultural environment, I'm talking about, you know, just holistically, from our education system to our beliefs, to where we are coming from, to the way we've been socialized. I think one of the challenges as a leader that I have is the education system, because I am employing people from the system. And I find like our education system and our socialization doesn't build us to be critical thinkers. We need solutions in Africa. A lot of the problems that we need, you know, we need more critical people who thinking critically. But I find it very challenging to leading in an organization where you're leading people, or you're working with people and other organizations and partners and all that, where people are not really thinking critically and thinking solutions and thinking. We are used to a beeline, you know, we take this direction and that's what we do until we drop. And even if it's not working, we just keep on doing that every day. You know, we are working in a culture where it's mostly an honor culture. You know, it's very hierarchical. We don't give feedback. We never speak the truth. You know, if I invite you for an event, you never tell me I'm not coming. You say, I will come, or I will see. It's a culture where we don't speak the truth. But, you know, we always overcommit. We would rather overcommit than hurt someone's feelings. Because if I say no, I am hurting your feelings, you know. I'm not giving you honor. I think now working in that environment is very, very challenging. Because for me, I have my culture. But not everybody has their culture. We have formed our DNA as an organization and our culture, but we have to work with people who are very different from us. And those people are very, very critical to our work. So how do we keep on pushing and achieving the results that we want to achieve in that cultural environment? And so those, I think, my two major challenges in leadership and just learning. So how do you thrash out that? How do you sail through those stormy waters?
So how have you been sailing through those stormy waters?
I think when I get an answer, I will give you. But so far, it's been learning and a lot of grace. it's been learning a lot of grace. But one of the things that we've given ourselves as an organization is we believe we have a very strong DNA and we have a very strong organizational culture. And so one of the things that we're very intentional is also distributing this to others. So we have a very beautiful story of success. We have reached to now 1.8 billion children in the world since 1985. So how have we been able to achieve that? So we have built over the years a very beautiful culture, very good DNA. And so one of the things that we're doing is to distribute that to the people we work with, to the churches, to the other organizations, but also when we have people coming into organization, we really try and orient them into that culture and help them, you know, adapt to that culture. So that for my belief as a leader, and I keep on telling the people and especially the young people who work with me is, you know, I'm training you not just to remain in this organization. I don't want to hold you, but I'm training you so that if you go to the next place where God has sent you, you'll never forget your time with us, because you will thrive in that place, because we will have given you the best culture, we'll have given you the best work ethics, we'll have given you the best confidence, and we'll give you the best skills to do that. So for me, and for us as an organization, as we work with people, we don't just work with them because we want to their labor between 5 and 8 in the evening. We work with them to prepare them for where they're also going to go.
Talk to us some of the aspects of that organization culture you're talking about.
So we have a 7-point DNA. We call it the hopeful DNA that has really helped us as an organization. And the hopeful DNA, it's an acronym. So for H, we say we are hardworking. So we work hard. We really work hard. For us to reach 10 million people, every member of our team really, really works hard. And the O after H is outcome-based. We work for objectives and outcomes. So we really measure our outcomes on a daily basis, and we discuss our outcomes on a daily basis. So we just don't want to keep on doing something. And if you're not hitting our outcomes, we are very adaptable. Actually, we say we don't make strategic plans, we make adaptive plans. We don't make, you know, rigid strategic plans, we make adaptive plans. And our plans change. You know, if you're not getting our outcomes 2 weeks into our plan, we can actually come back and change it. So we love that adaptability because we are people of outcomes. And then P is purity. We really look at the purity of heart. We don't want to be hypocrites. If you're not happy, you know, say I'm not happy. If you're not satisfied, say I'm not satisfied. So we just want everybody to bring the purest of their hearts. Of course, we are not perfect, but we're encouraging people. And so what we do, we also create that environment where people can bring pure hearts, because I could be of pure heart, but I don't want to really come with a pure heart, because if I come with a pure heart, you know, I'll be misunderstood and I'll be judged and I may get into trouble. So we have a very good feedback system. We do 360 feedback, by the way, in our organization. When we do our annual evaluation, we evaluate the people we are leading, but we also give the people whom we are leading an opportunity to evaluate us. And then E is efficiency. So every other year, we are trying to do more with little. So we learn. Every day we come back and we ask ourselves, because our work is very resource intensive, how do we achieve more tomorrow with the same resources today, or even with less resources? So every day we evaluate our efficiency, and every member of the team is always given an opportunity to innovate so that we can be more efficient. So that's efficient. And then I'm at in F, faithful. We have to be faithful, and we encourage each other to be faithful. We are a donor-based organization. We get money from donors around the world who give us money and resources, and we have to train ourselves to be good stewards. And we have a very good reporting system. And, you know, again, because of the purity of heart, we ensure that all our employees and all our contractors, you know, try their best to be faithful. You know, it's repeated every day. And then hopeful, you is uninhibited. You for uninhibited. We don't go at obstacles. We look at it and then we walk back. When every time we do our work, we see an obstacle, we stand there, we innovate. And we see, how do we surmount this obstacle? You know, how do we remove this obstacle? How do we go around this obstacle? So nothing stands in our way. And one of the reasons, a very spiritual reason, because we believe that God has called us to do work that is already planned. So if he called us and he led us this way, he knows the way through. So we go back to pray and all that. So, and then L is for led by the Spirit. We just give ourselves to be led by the Spirit. We are so limited in our sight, even at our best of innovation and ideas, we are just so limited. So every time we just have to depend on God to just open our eyes and to see the best way to do things.
Wow, that's amazing. That is so, so good.
Yeah.
That's so good. Very inspiring. Very inspiring. Really, thank really you. Good. Hopeful. But that's a culture. Those are the pillars. Those are the aspects. Wow, that is good. So, if you are to sit down with a young man who looked at and admires you or had is hearing this story and reaches out to you and say, Ishmael, what do I have to do to get where you are? What do I have to do? I'm just starting off in my leadership journey. I've been given this role as a youth pastor or as a youth leader like you. I'm 18. What do I need to do now? What would you tell them?
Number one is that they have to unlearn. I've had to unlearn a lot of things. And I think I spoke about culture as one of the biggest challenge. As a society, our social contract with people when they're young is go to school, work hard, go to university, get a good job. And that's what everybody's working towards. And a lot of these young people have learned. The end is make a lot of money. And by the way, nowadays you can make a lot of money without having to do all these other steps. So if I can make a lot of money, and that's why we did a research some time back. I could be like seven years ago in Ghana. We were developing a program we call Lead Today that we've developed with John Maxwell. And we did a research among young people, and we realized that teenagers don't want to be leaders because there are a lot of misconceptions around leadership. So for a young person to be a leader, they first have to unlearn a lot of things about their purpose and their direction in life. They have to tear a lot of the social contracts they have, including with their parents, because our parents took us to school so that we could make money. But in Africa, if we don't change that mentality, if we don't teach our young people to change that mentality, it's just making money second. You need to first of all learn your purpose. And then we went to an education system where there was not teaching. So we were all taught the same. We all had the same goal. And one of the goals was always to beat the other person. So you spent 18 plus years in a system that taught you that success is beating George. George is always number one. I am number three. My aim in life is to beat George and take his position. And then for me, for any person that I mentor, that's where we start our leadership journey. And I tell them, strip yourself. I want you to stand alone and I want you to look inside yourself and ask yourself, why am I here? And you don't start your leadership journey until you answer that question. Because the most beautiful thing about enjoying and being successful in leadership is just learning to follow a purpose. If you don't learn to follow a purpose, you will not surmount all the challenges that come with leadership. You will never be able to grow because what are you growing into? Are you just growing into a bigger salary? A bigger salary has an end. Are you growing into a bigger title? A bigger title can come to an end. But for you to be a successful leader, you grow into fulfilling your purpose. You grow into unlocking your potential. And you grow into following your passion. Because again, if you're also not happy, you know, we have a lot of depressed leaders because they are in positions of leadership that they don't enjoy doing. They're depressed, and that depression goes back and falls back on the people they're leading. And they end up leading very unhappy teams. And for me, I keep on telling people, if you're not operating as a leader in an area of your passion, you need to step back. And unfortunately, a lot of people are not doing that because our leadership positions are not... they're not a source of joy, but they are mostly a source of security. And you don't want to lose that security. And the other lesson that I'll teach a young man is a lesson that I've learned, is that just keep on serving. Keep on serving. Do not follow vain ambition, and especially the Gen Z. These are people who want to instantly succeed. You know, I think of late I've had this phrase trending, trust the process. And I think I totally agree with that phrase. You have to trust the process. I was actually counseling a young leader recently who really wanted to get into a position, and I told them, you're not ready for that position. And I've seen people fail because they got into positions too fast. They were not ready. The emotions were not mature enough. They didn't have the skills, and they didn't even have the integrity. The integrity had not grown into a position. And when they got into those positions destroyed them. So a lot of young people need to learn that. It's just not trying to be the best 40 under 40. And I know it's good. It's good to have that glory. Yeah. You know, right now we have 20 under 20. So we are trying to achieve as much as when we are young. You know, I'm trying to be the best. I need to be a part of the cream. I don't want to walk this journey to that place. If you're not the best in your 20s, you know, just look into your 30s and see what lessons are there, what opportunities still lie there. So that. These are some of the lessons. I think for me, I've not pushed for leadership. Leadership found me serving. I found myself there. I didn't even realize I got there until other people started looking at me and telling me, Ishmael, you can be this. You can be this. But I just served and I grew. And that's by the other. For the young people who work for me, I tell them every day, you have to sit down and ask yourself, how have I grown today? Because, you know, you might be living your purpose. But if you're a mediocre person who is not growing, when that opportunity to get into leadership comes, it will not find you because you're not in that space of growth. You'll not have grown to that space when that opportunity comes, and you're going to miss also that opportunity.
Wow. And I really agree with you. We won't even bring the angle of social media. Yeah. That just brings another crazy twist, you know, to appearing to succeed, to appear. So it's a big deception that many people, young and old, you know, are falling into that and trying to use that as a benchmark, you know. And I like what you say, purpose and serve. Just talking about Bible characters, looking at somebody like David, we're talking with somebody recently. You know, David as a shepherd was faithful, you know, doing what he was doing. So when he faced Goliath, it was a no-brainer. He said, I've killed a lion, I've killed a bear. This guy, you know, he was experienced, he was ready. He was not afraid like the other. So it's really saying serving and being faithful. I like that. So Ishmael, if you are to use an analogy or something to describe your leadership style, what would that be?
So the image, as my leadership, the image that I see is an eagle, because, as an eagle, I need to have a higher vision than the people that I'm leading. And I need to soar higher, because they're always looking up to me, asking me, where are we going? Or, what do we do about this situation? So I need to have a zoomed out vision. And also, I work for a very futuristic organization. We look into the future, and my leadership role is to help my team figure out where is the world going? Where is the world of young people going? So that we can be there. By the time the world gets there, we are ready for it. We are not playing catch up. And so that also requires me to be an eagle, so that I can see very far, very far. And this guy called Wayne Gretzky, he was an ice hockey player from Canada. And one time he said that I skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it has been. So for him, he thinks about the ice hockey ball. It's called the puck. Where is it going? So that's where I need to be going. So that by the time it gets me there, by the time the puck gets there, I am there and I get a very good opportunity to score. So for myself to be successful as a leader, I need to always be ahead of things. And so I need to be like that ice hockey player. So I think those are the image and the analogy that I can give about my leadership. And I think this needs to be for every other leader. You can't move with everybody else. You need to be way ahead. You need to know, because you need to see the dangers. You need to see the opportunities before anyone else can see. And that's how you lead your team into success.
So Ishmael, how do you do that? How do you go ahead? What are the things that you do to keep you ahead?
The one is just reading. I read a lot. I think on my phone, I have apps from most of the major news outlets. I need to know what is happening in the world. I need to read people's opinions. I need to know, what's happening in the world of technology and all that. On Twitter, I follow a lot of technology, based handles. I follow a lot of futuristic based handles. I want to know, what's happening on social media. I'm on social media platforms. And then I read, right now I'm reading a lot on innovation. I'm actually about just to start taking a course on innovation, just to learn to analyze the world of today and to learn to view the world, the problems of today with a future eye, and to learn to build solutions. And then one of the things that I learned from one of my leaders is to have a young person near you. At my age, I can't keep up with everything. I have young people that I mentor, but I also have young people that are mentoring me. And I have looked for young people, and I meet with them for coffee, and I meet with them to have conversations. And I just meet with them and ask them, so what's happening? What's kicking? So what's going to happen? How are you seeing the world? And young people have a very, very good perspective. And I try to keep them as young as I know. I have a high schooler. I have a teenager. I have a very young adult, someone in their early 20s. I have someone close to that. And these people, when I listen to them and I get their perspective, and, I challenge them, I give them some questions and I want to see their views. How could you solve this problem? How do you see this situation? And they always give me another perspective that is not from now, because these kids of nowadays, these kids, they live in the future. So this they gave me there. I use them as binoculars or as a telescope to see where life is going. When I sit with my kids, when I sit with my 11-year-old and I hear him talking about Tesla and what Tesla should do, with their Cybertruck, I hear him saying, I wish I had this thing. I hear him, Dad, I'm going to innovate. I'm going to learn to do coding because I need to solve this problem. And I love just being in that space, just to listen and see what he's seeing into the future. What is he seeing in his future? And he tells me, do you know that in 10 years, this is how we will not even be driving cars. Cars will just be driving them. They will just be flying. And sometimes can look like a dream, but it just helps me to get into that place of conversation with myself. What if this happens? How does it affect the work that I do? How does it affect the lives of young people if some of these things happen?
Wow, that is so, so well said. Thank you so much. So in conclusion, you've given us your leadership story, shared your experiences. So question, What is the moral of this leadership story of yours?
If I was to write myself as a book, what would be the last chapter be? I'm just rephrasing your question. I think for me, when I look at my leadership journey, it's been when I reflect on some of the very good decisions that I made and some of the very good paths that I've taken that I would encourage anyone else to morally take is number one, servant leadership. I think naturally I'm a proud guy, you know, but I think just working with God has taught me to serve and have found the joy of serving. And I wake up every day to serve. I think in most of my staff meetings, I'm always asking, how can I serve you? I always ask for the people who work around me, and I ask them, how can I serve you? How can I make your work better? How can I give you joy in the work that you're doing? What is it that I can do? Is there anything that I can do? And I've learned to serve. I've learned to serve. For example, I've told you I lead 10 countries and I have teams in those 10 countries. And every time I talk to the teams, I tell the teams, you don't serve me, because, you know, there's a tendency to see, this is a regional director, I'm the national director, this is my boss. I tell them, I'm not your boss. I am here to serve you. This is your country. I am here to serve you. How can I serve you so that you're able to serve in your job? And that's the culture that I've created. And I think that's one of the moral stories. And it has worked. It has worked because I think that has been a very big part of the journey to where that I've been. Number two, follow your passion. I have consistently followed my passion. I have been the last 22 years, I have done this one thing and I have not stopped. When no one was paying me, I did it. I did it when I didn't have anything. I did it when I could barely feed myself. I was given a lot of opportunities, but I followed my passion because I was very confident in my passion was my purpose. So that's the moral of my leadership. Follow your purpose. And I think I thank God now to where he has brought me. I'm leading in so many dimensions and in so many places that I've been invited to be a leader. And it's just because of that, because I followed my passion. And number two, integrity. Just be a leader of integrity. You're not there to gain yourself. Don't look for ways to steal. Just be a good steward. Steward your time, steward the people, steward the money in a very good way.
Thank you so much. That's a good place to end podcast for today. Thank you so much for sharing with us your heart, your passion, and we have felt it. And I believe as we listen to what you have said, we will learn, lead, and live better. Thank you, Ishmael, for being our guest.
You're most welcome, and thank you for this opportunity. It has also been an opportunity for me to reflect. You know, those questions just help me also reflect as I give the answers. So that was a great opportunity.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, BNG Consultants Limited and BNG Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.